Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaruthari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaruthari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaruthari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaruthari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stuttara Stushi Shimad His Divine Grace Lacey Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai Go Premanande Hare Go Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Well, somewhere in this room, I suspect there's a Bhagavad Gita, which I want to speak from, but it's not here. So anyone see it on one of the counters? Or I suppose I probably one over there, right? With the Sanskrit, hopefully. Does that have Sanskrit in it? Oh, there it is. Here we go. Not in here. So tonight I'm going to speak from about a verse from the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I just want to mention this because I was thinking when I was singing. One time Srila Prabhupada commented on this song, Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Of course, the first thing I was thinking, we're so fortunate. We have all these beautiful things that Prabhupada gave us. This is one of them, this wonderful song. Prabhupada it was when he was touring India with his disciples, he started singing it before his classes. Then it became a standard thing. Jai Radha Madhava. So one of the, there are different names of Krishna in that song, and also talks about different leelas or pastimes of Krishna. So there it says, the phrase is mentioned there, Gopijana Vallabha. The Vallabha means he's the lover, or he's very dear to the Gopijana. So Gopijana means either, literally the Gopi people, literally, but it can mean the Gopis or anybody in the village of Vrindavan. You can say as a Gopijana, because they're all, you can say, ultimately in one sense, they're all followers of the Gopis because they're the greatest devotees of Krishna. So Prabhupada said, this is our goal. We want to become one of the Gopijanas. We want to also enter into Goloka Vrindavan and be able to serve Krishna directly in the spiritual world. So we have a process of trying to attain that very, very elevated goal. Part of it is to hear from scripture like the Bhagavad Gita. So today I'm going to read text number 10 of the fourth chapter. Fourth chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. By the way, these Prabhupada more or less gives, there are standard names for the different chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. They're standard not because they're there in the original, but because they've become traditional. So this one is called, there are Sanskrit names for all of these. I don't know if they have them in our edition. It's having them in some of the editions. So this chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge, which is the focus of this chapter. This is text number 10. We'll follow our usual class procedure. I'll chant and you repeat, and then a few of you can chant. Vitaraga bhaya krodha. Manmaya mam upashrita, bhavo jnana tapasa, putamad bhava magata, vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mam upashrita. Bhava jnana tapasa, putamad bhava magata. Vitaraga bhaya krodha, mamaya mam upasita. Bhava jnana tapasa, putamad bhava magata, vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mam upasita. Bhava jnana tapasa, putamad bhava magata, vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mam upasita. Bhava jnana tapasa, putamad bhava magata. Translation. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. And thus they attained transcendental love for me. Srila Prabhupada's purport, this fairly long purport, almost 2 pages. I'll probably just make comments as I go along here. First of all, this comes right after another famous verse, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Evam Yoveti Tatvataha Tyaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mameti Sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So Krishna says we can end our material existence and go to him, attain his eternal abode, if we understand the transcendental nature of his birth and activities. So that means we have to have a special kind of knowledge. It's not just theoretical understanding, but realized knowledge about Krishna. So the follow-up verse, today's verse, he's talking about becoming purified by knowledge of him. Real knowledge means you become purified. Your heart becomes purified when you have real transcendental knowledge. And then you get, as it says here, they all attain transcendental love for me. So Srila Prabhupada says, as described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. So what Prabhupada is saying here, it seems to be sparked by this. There are three things that one has to overcome to get transcendental knowledge. The first one is attachment. So the materialists are especially in the category of materialists, those who are attached. Materialist basically means everybody in the material world. Or that's where we all start. A little above that, we'll hear about actually some advancement from that state, you might say. But that this material attachment means we think this is all there is. This, of course, is a very prevalent understanding, misunderstanding today. People scoff at the idea of anything that's transcendental. They think, many people, they think that the scientists have proved that there is no God or there's no spiritual thing. Everything is just matter. It all came from just molecular particles or some atomic particles or whatever the explanation is, banging together. And somehow from that, here we are today. So that it's really quite an illogical idea, when you think about it. From impersonal material particles, you get conscious beings. So that's one of our first challenges against the impersonalists. Of course, Prabhupada would say, well, prove it. You can say it, but prove it. If you can make a conscious being from matter, well, here's a person who just died. Everything is there, so bring him back to life. Why not? It's not missing anything. Of course, we say something is missing there. Spirit is missing, and that's why you can't do it. But still, people are they're caught up in this materialistic concept of life, and Prabhupada began the purport by saying that they can't conceive of the idea that God can have a form. Even if they have some conception of God, it tends to be impersonal, which is, he'll speak about that more. But when they see a form of God, they balk at the idea. You know, you show people who don't know Krishna, anything about Krishna, and say, well, this is God. Well, well, that can't be God. Are you kidding me? How can that be God? God doesn't have a form, especially a form like that. Is that a boy or a girl? He's so beautiful. They're completely bewildered by the idea. They can't. The natural reaction, of course, it, for people is, they first of all, they tend to scoff at the idea, how could this possibly be God? So Prabhupada says here also they have a different conception, which is a kind of impersonalism. They see the whole universe as God. Now this is a very common thing, of course, today also. People think that somehow or other the universe is acting in some way. They talk about, you know, the universe is favoring me or not favoring me or whatever. They have this sense. We could say that intuition is there because it is true that something is controlling you, affecting your life. You don't have complete freedom. In fact, this is one of the main arguments that Prabhupada would make about, especially he would argue against those, especially the yogis who came and tried to tell us in the 60s that we were all God, and they're still saying it today, and of course in India they're still saying it, and everywhere in the world there are those who say it, and there are those who like to believe it. Yes, I'm God, I've just forgotten. I just nodded off for a moment, but when I remember, everything will be just all right. So what was Prabhupada's argument against that? No, you're controlled. What does God mean? God means he's completely in control. Nothing controls him. Nobody controls him. In Sanskrit, of course, the word is Ishvara. Ishvara means he's in control. He can do anything he wants because he has control of everything. We really don't have control over anything when you get right down to it, because everything that we think we have control of, it's all based on something else. There's so many conditions that have to be met. Prabhupada used this phrase, conditioned soul. We're all conditioned souls in this material world. So I like to think of two different aspects of that. One is that we have to meet so many conditions to do anything. And the other is that we give conditioned responses automatically to certain things. We think we have a lot of freedom. And actually, this reminds me, just on Friday we were chanting downtown, and there seemed to be still a lot of students, even though it's summertime, and they're all going to some kind of event, quote, I don't know what it was. And they're all dressed the same. It was so striking to see. All the girls had bikini tops and shorts on, and they were all in groups, and most of the boys had shorts on and athletic paraphernalia, like tank tops, that kind of thing, like gaiters or whatever. Some sports team. And they're all thinking that, you know, we're all doing our thing. They're all doing the same thing. This tends to be what people do. So there's some force, you might say, controlling our so-called freedom to do what we want. So that's in subtle ways it acts, but even, of course, in a more direct way, everything. We can't breathe. If we can't breathe, we can't do anything. Or if we can't eat, we can't do anything. This is quite an amazing thing when you think, of course, we probably don't necessarily think of it, but imagine how precarious our situation is. If we don't eat, we die. We have to probably call the struggle for existence, which certainly is a struggle. Just try to stop eating and see what happens. Just to stay alive. You have to fight just to stay alive, you might say. You have to somehow or other, of course, we have to work our whole lives just to put food on the table so we don't die. That's our situation. Actually, in the Vishnu Purana, there's a verse about the different energies of the Lord. And the energy that controls the material world is called avidya karma. That means we're always in ignorance. We don't know how we got here, what's going on, where we're going, what it's all about. And karma, Prabhupada characterized it in one lecture. He said it means that you can't do anything without working for it. That's material life. Everything takes some effort to get it. So Krishna's in a different situation. He's the supreme controller. He's the person. And he can accomplish anything. He has this energy or potency called Satya Sankalpa. That means whatever he wants, it happens. It's truth. Anything he says is true. And anything he wants to happen, that happens automatically. But we're not in that situation. So there's a conscious entity. There is a conscious entity behind everything in this world, but it's not just the impersonal universe acting upon you. This idea is really strange when you think about it. Of course, in some sense, it shows that there's this intuition that things are happening to us that are beyond our control. So then Prabhupada says here that these materialists they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. Well, first he says they consider the gigantic manifestation as supreme. Okay, so I talked about that. So then here, this next part. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. So here he's moving on to the second point here, which is bhaya. So the verse said, being freed from attachment, fear, and anger. So these three things. These three things are also mentioned in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 59, where Krishna says, the sthita dhimuni, the muni, the thoughtful person, or the transcendentally realized person is free from these things. You have to become free from these things, or when you attain the platform of transcendence, you'll be free of these things. So the different lists of qualities, so this particular list is given here and also there. So you have to be free from raga, attachment, as I was talking about, attachment to the things of this world. Of course, we could say a lot about attachment. We're attached. We know what it's like in trying to make spiritual progress. We have so many attachments. And generally, those things have to be given up. There are things that have to be given up and things that have to be accepted. In the very beginning of our, would probably call the law book for Krishna consciousness, the Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the very first principles that Srila Rupa Goswami points out in the beginning of the practice of Krishna consciousness. He begins by accepting a guru. And when you accept the guru, you're going to have to do things you don't like, and you're going to have to give up things that you like. That's part of the reality of making advancement in spiritual life. So we have our attachments, and sometimes it's difficult to give up those attachments. So that's something about attachment. Then fear. Now here what Prabhupada says here. Now he says because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. So the idea here is that because we're persons, then we suffer in this material world. Actually, the greatest sufferings tend to be what we inflict on each other, what human beings inflict on each other, and very, you know, painful things that happen in the heart, happens to the heart, broken heart, in relationships in this world. And of course, also in the context of attachment, when you're just like, you have very, very strong attachment to someone, and then you lose that attachment. So you might respond by saying, oh, I wish I was never born. I wish I wasn't, you know, me. I wish I didn't exist. That kind of idea. Just because I'm a person, I'm suffering like this. So Prabhupada said this people respond when they hear about spiritual ideas, especially personalism. Well, I don't want that, because to me that just means suffering. And they're afraid of that, as he says here. That's the bhaya. Bhaya is fear. Of course, fear is in many places in the Vedic scriptures. It's described that fear is a constant in the material world. We have different grades of fear, of course. We have people who have very deep phobias about a lot of different things, and just a general anxiety. Many people these days suffer from different kinds of anxieties, or just generalized anxieties. We're worried and we don't even know why exactly. Somehow we're just not quite peaceful, huh? There's always something. And of course, all the things, horrible things going on in the world are definitely there. And then we have, you know, we have political leaders who are trying to control us by scaring us in different ways. So we'll do what they tell us to do. So we tend to be afraid in different ways. So it's something that's not very desirable. We want to become free from fear. So Prabhupada says people become fear when they hear about the personalism. So generally they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean. So he's going to talk a little more about impersonalism here, how impersonalists, because they don't like this concept of a person, that we're persons or God is a person, there's a relationship between us because of their experience in the material world. So he says when they are informed
that spiritual life is also individual and personal. They become afraid of becoming persons again. Again means after liberation. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. This is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. So, I mean, when you think about what this really said, just merging into the ocean, what, that's the highest you can aspire for, become like a bubble in the ocean. Somehow people aspire for that. Of course, it's a very common thing. People want some kind of impersonal mukti, impersonal liberation. They think that's the highest thing. Of course, this is also the common conception of what Hinduism is. If you read, you know, what is the goal of Hinduism in the encyclopedia somewhere, and you'll see. Generally, this is what they say. Everything is about ultimately becoming one with Brahman or merging. Even bhakti, they tend to say, that's the aim of bhakti, even. Worship Krishna so that you can merge with him or merge to the Brahma Jyoti. So this idea, this is a kind of fearful stage of life devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. So there's some credit that at least there's a conception that there is spirit. This isn't everything. It's beyond materialism. But it's not a very robust understanding, not a very clear understanding. Not, as Prabhupada says, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. They become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Now here you could think that, well, Prabhupada is talking about materialists also here, hardcore radicalists or empiricists and so on. But he takes it a different direction. He says this is for those who are aiming for the void. There are two things, and they're very similar, that the ultimate truth is impersonal, some kind of spiritual, all-pervasive consciousness, you might say, or light. But then there's the idea, which Prabhupada would always attribute to the Buddhists. Actually, the Buddhists, they're living many different branches, but at least some branches of Buddhism, they follow this idea, they ascribe to this idea, that ultimately it's zero. The ultimate truth is zero, or jiro, as Prabhupada would say in his pronunciation. Actually, this is the jnanis pursue this also under the Vedic umbrella rather than Buddhism. The idea of neti neti. Neti means you look around this world trying to find what's real. So you start eliminating things. You know, anything that's temporary, that's not going to last, that can't be the ultimate truth. So neti, neti means not this, not this. So you go, and Prabhupada said, so this is the philosophy of minus. You minus this, minus this, minus this. So ultimately, where do you end up? Zero. You remove everything in your experience, and you end up with zero. Of course, they have complicated ways of rationalizing it. Just like when they say, I've heard an argument, it's something like, well, the past doesn't exist, the future doesn't exist, and the present doesn't really exist either, because what is the present? As soon as you try to think about it, then it's gone. There is no present, really. It becomes the past so fast, or you're in the future so fast. There is exactly. So this is why this kind of argument that they give to come to the idea of the void. So Prabhupada is analyzing people's psychology, how they were attracted to different philosophies. Now this certainly, of course, has something to do with where we end up in our, you know, questioning what life is about. We have certain conditioning that makes us think in different ways. Or certain things appeal to us. It's called the Acharya series of videos of Srila Prabhupada preaching. So there's one scene of Prabhupada in New Vrindavan, and he's sitting there outside, a nice scene, he's preaching, and then there's a new person there. So at one point, Prabhupada turns to him and he says, so this philosophy does not appeal to you? So, of course, that it certainly appealed to Srila Prabhupada. He's in complete ecstasy delivering the really basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So, of course, Krishna says also in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks him, because Arjuna hears about yoga. Krishna tells him about yoga in the sixth chapter. And you know Arjuna's response, he says, well, I don't think I can do this. This is, sounds so hard. You might as well ask me to control the wind. So then he says, I think, what happens if you try to do it, but then you don't make it? You fall down, you don't complete the course in this life. What happens? So Krishna gives two answers. He says, if you've progressed not so far, then you'll get a nice birth in your next life where you'll be in a good situation to take it up again. But he says, if you've done it for a longer period of time, in your next life you'll take birth in a family of transcendentalists, people who are dedicated to that, and you'll be automatically, practically against your will, you'll be automatically attracted to it. Just somehow or other, you become a Hare Krishna. Inexplicable to your family and others. What happened to him? So inexplicably, that draw, that attraction is there because you've progressed a certain distance toward Krishna. So when you see him, you have a little, or you hear about Krishna, you hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then it takes, you might say. So, but other people, you know, for whatever, we're all indifferent. We've been in this material world for a long time. We're at different stages of spiritual evolution, or maybe spiritual devolution for some of us going in the wrong direction. So we respond differently. So there are people who are attracted. They're attracted to different philosophies, which, you know, we often wonder, of course, this often happens with someone where it does take, you might say. Many of us who came to Krishna consciousness, when we heard it, was like, oh, yes, of course. Then you start telling other people about it, and they don't react the same way. You say, why doesn't he, you know, take it like I did? And because, you know, for whatever, there are many different reasons. So anyway, let me go on here. Prabhupada says, such people are, is this where we are? Yes. They see that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. So if you don't, if it doesn't taste good, you know, we have this analogy. If you have jaundice, then you take something sweet and it doesn't taste sweet. It tastes kind of bitter, or at least it doesn't have much flavor to it. So Krishna consciousness is distasteful to many people because they're diseased. They can't taste the sweetness of Krishna consciousness. And he says, some people are too materially attached, so going back to that, and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. So they just ignore it. This is very, of course, very common today. People, they're just not interested at all. Don't even talk. I'm not interested in that. You know, I got my biology exam tomorrow or whatever. They have their lives are going on. They have so many things to do. They don't think about that. Let's see. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything. Of course, this is also where people end up today. They just say, there are just so many philosophies, I can't, you know, make it better for me not even to think about it, because everyone's just arguing with each other, and how can I sort it out? They disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. So they just become hopeless. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. Of course, we have that whole realm of today, the psychedelics and people trying to get realization from that. Srila Prabhupada was not in favor of that whatsoever. Although he did say, he was trying to explain how you think LSD is great? Well, just imagine a whole room full of LSD. Trying to appeal to the hippie conception of things. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world, negligence of spiritual life, fear of spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. So here Prabhupada is bringing it to, if you don't want to get stuck in these different categories of people who are just going to end up suffering in this material world endlessly, if you want to transform your life into something beneficial, something that will bring you, make your life fortunate, then you can do it through the process of devotional service. Now I'm just going to read through, I'll try not to stop here, this last part. Now Prabhupada is quoting, this is very important verses from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about the stages that one goes through. Because Krishna consciousness is an attainable thing. It's not just theory. You can become free of all these impediments to your spiritual life, and you can make gradual progress where you can come to the point of seeing Krishna face to face, Prabhupada would say. So this, according to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.4.15 through 16, the science of devotional service, ado shraddha tatu saru sangha, I'll skip that. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness and self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. End quote. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So by the slow process of devotional service under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord. So the basic idea of these verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as Prabhupada said, it's a science. If you perform the science properly in the laboratory of your life, then you'll get the result. You will actually get Krishna prema. And as he says, slow process. It doesn't happen overnight. You have to apply yourself diligently and make gradual progress. All right, I'll stop here. Anybody have any questions or comments?
Any questions? What is that fear of individual identity?
What is the fear, as I was saying? Because in our individual identities and material consciousness, we have so much suffering. So sometimes I see, you go to the ocean and you see there are people who go out and they just lie down on some flotation device and they just float. All they want to do is float on the ocean. And there are others who are playing on the shore and jumping around and having fun, you can say. So you can just float in Brahman for eternity, or you can enjoy with Krishna in the waves of prema, love for Krishna. So there are people that somehow think, maybe the waves are a little rough. In the material world, the waves are rough. You get bounced around, and there are so many hardships being a person. And this is what happens. What happens, people become frustrated. We know ultimately it leads to suicide. People just can't handle it. Life is difficult. That's a fact. So let me just put an end to it completely. I just don't want to be. Sometimes people, they argue like that. They say, well, God, I never asked to be created. You know, God, they want to damn God for creating them. I didn't have any choice in the matter. So let me just extinguish myself. So imagine how the deep psychological frustration that leads to that. So it has to do with, you know, the interactions in the material world, especially, you know, what is material life, where we live among other people. And even if you don't associate with other people directly, or people become hermits or whatever, still, no man is an island. You're affected by what goes on in this world. So that's the idea. People are, and of course, you know, what is our, Prabhupada would say, propaganda. It's funny because this word has a negative connotation, of course, but Prabhupada used it in a positive sense. What is our preaching? What are we trying to tell people, convince them of? No, it's not. You don't want to kill yourself. You can live a wonderful life with Krishna. Look how beautiful he is. Read about him and his devotees and what goes on in the spiritual world. Or even the devotees who are advanced in the material world, they're so satisfied, they don't even care whether they're in the spiritual world or not. That's not their goal. Prabhupada, you know, he often, of course, encouraged us. Yes, you should want to go back home, back to Godhead. He named his magazine, Back to Godhead Magazine. So you want to go, we want to go back to Godhead. We want to go to Krishna. But there's a stage where the devotee, actually, when you read explanations of this series of verses about the progression, there comes a stage where the devotee doesn't really even know if he's in the material world or not, basically. He's living in transcendence. He's already with Krishna. Whether he's in this artificial material world, which is what it is, or not, it doesn't really matter to him. He's completely satisfied. Because he is with Krishna. The soul, in other words, when the soul is connected with Krishna, soul means us. That's our identity. We're spiritual persons. So, of course, that's the ultimate artificial thing to try to. You can't really ultimately extinguish yourself. You can go into kind of a deep sleep, but you can't extinguish yourself. But our nature is to be connected with Krishna, to have a loving relationship with Krishna. And it's so satisfying, it's so absorbing that you don't even realize. The material body just goes on. This is explained in the Bhagavatam. The material body just kind of goes on by the forces of nature, but the devotee's in a different world. The body's in this world, but the devotee's consciousness is in a different world. We have examples of this in the Bhagavatam. You know, most of you are familiar with the story of Prahlad Maharaj. So most of us, we especially know the climax of the story when Lord Nrsingadev appears. But earlier, there are several chapters, and some of them deal with Prahlad's life. Well, Prahlad was in that state at times where he was seeing Krishna face to face. And he was laughing sometimes and crying sometimes and dancing sometimes and just completely out of this world. His consciousness was completely out of this world. So that state is actually attainable. And many devotees, there are many devotees throughout history, and we have recordings of their lives in our books, who are on these very, very elevated stages, where they in some ways they do the impossible. Actually, if you read about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, especially Chaitanya Bhagavat, we have it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, of course, which Prabhupada gave us. But Chaitanya Bhagavat is about Lord Chaitanya's earlier life. And over again, you hear about this ecstasy and that ecstasy and Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy and Lord Nityananda's ecstasy and Advaita's ecstasy and this devotee's ecstasy and that devotee's ecstasy. And they do these incredible things, like they don't eat for a month, or they pass out for hours and hours and hours, or sometimes days, 3 days, the devotee's unconscious. People don't know if he's going to return. All this, they're just, because what's happening, all of this, actually, when you read it too, you may think, well, this is just, there's so much hyperbole about what the things that go on. But actually, this is a description of another plane of existence that we don't have access to in our current stage of consciousness. But it's so ecstatic. These devotees do amazing things. Play with tigers and snakes and all these amazing kinds of things. So this is the personal world, actually. We think this personal world is where, you know, there's gossip and backbiting and court divorce and court cases and all kinds of things. Business, everything is competitive. We're competing in this world for everything. But there's a world where it's not like that. It's wonderful. Everything is ecstatic. Everything is congenial. Everything is going on very nicely in Krishna's association. So we have to learn about that and read about that, become convinced about it. One thing that's interesting when you read these books, you hear often, anyone who hears this will get prema. Anyone who hears this will get the eternal blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyone who hears this. So we have to hear repeatedly. The idea is that it makes an impression upon us. As I was saying, we have certain reflex actions because of our conditioning. So we're trying to change that conditioning. Sometimes I think, I don't know if they still have them around when I was a kid. They had these little punch things. They're like a little blown up balloon, but they're weighted at the bottom. And you hit it and it bounces back up, right? So that in some ways we're like that, you know, whatever happens to us, that we bounce back up in a certain way, you know, reflex action that we have. So we need to take the air out of it. We need to respond in a different way. So we're trying to change. We're trying to make it automatically turning to Krishna. Prabhupada says, unfortunately, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, he says, in the conditioned life, that our reflex is to be not Krishna conscious, you know, to think in a negative, to think in a materialistic way. That's how we're conditioned. So we're trying to change that. You know, this is our brainwashing, as Prabhupada would say. Or brain giving, Prabhupada would say. We're not brainwashing. Well, we are washing our brain, actually, because it's full of so much cow dung, as Prabhupada would say. So much dung in the brain. So we're trying to wash it or change it or give it. Giving brain, Prabhupada would say. So this is a real, because the real spiritual life is there. It's not what you think it is. Don't think, well, this is the material world, so it must be something like this, or maybe a little bit better, like the classic frog in the well philosophy. Maybe the ocean is 10 times bigger than my well, or like that. No, it's beyond your conception. So we're trying to become real persons in relationship to Krishna. Krishna will awaken that real personhood within us, where we enjoy with him forever.
I have a question on when I see the Buddhist monks, they look very peaceful. But here Prabhupada is saying, or you read, that out of frustration, they are attracted to voyeurism or the philosophy of cessation of existence. But they look very peaceful. Doesn't look like coming from frustrated. Maybe.
Well, I think you'll find all kinds of people in all different kinds of groups. Even among Hare Krishnas. Some Hare Krishnas are peaceful, some are not so peaceful. It also depends on your level of realization. So they may be getting something. For one thing, yeah, they're moving away from gross materialism. There's certainly some benefit to that. But their philosophy, ultimately, deep down, is based on this idea, this rejection of personalism. It's somehow deep within them. Somehow it's taken an effect on them. So they also need to be purified. It's not, they won't ultimately be satisfied. They may think so. They may think that this is where, but how can you be satisfied when you extinguish your existence? who is experiencing anything? You can't experience. So yeah, ultimately it's not a peaceful state. And of course, in the beginning also, or as they're progressing toward that, like Prabhupada, of course, this refers especially to the Vedic context, bukti, mukti, siddhi, kami. Those who want mukti, they're also aspiring for a kind of mukti or liberation from the hardships of this material world. They have that aspiration. But the devotee is said to be peaceful because his only aspiration is to serve Krishna. He's peaceful in that. He does, like I was saying, he doesn't even care if he goes back to Godhead or not. Because he knows, I can have Krishna here, right now. That's his aspiration. So that gives peace, actually. And also the conviction, which becomes realized in time, that Krishna is here right now, as Prabhupada would sometimes say. He's sitting in the airport, and he would say, "Now I'm in Vaikuntha. This is Goloka Vrindavan. This is Vrindavan right here. Wherever Krishna is everywhere, wherever Krishna is, that's the spiritual world." So we're trying to, of course, come to the stage where we see like that. Then you're really peaceful when you're always with Krishna. I remember many years ago, there was a bookmark I had, and someone printed. It was a quote from Prabhupada, just paraphrase, but the idea is that Krishna is in control of everything, and I'm Krishna's devotee, therefore why should I worry about anything? That's the basic idea. So that's the idea of peace. Everything, Krishna's in control. What am I worrying about? All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada. Oh, someone has a question. Okay. Oh, the microphone's over there.
Thank you for the great class, Prabhuji. So I have one question. You mentioned about devotional service and mukti. Is this same or different? You know, there are five types of mukti I hear.
Oh, mukti you're saying or bhakti?
Mukti.
No, we're not interested in mukti. Lord Kapila Dev taught us that. We're not interested. The devotees, those who are Krishna's devotees, really. Now, of course, there's Vaikuntha. So, and you know, there are people aspiring to be with Krishna in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. But especially in our line of spiritual, of Krishna consciousness, given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we only want to please Krishna, that's all. Whatever Krishna does with us, that's our mukti, you can say. And when we're serving Krishna, that's mukti also. What more do I want? That's one thing that it's always emphasized in our books, and we may miss it because we hear it so much. But the point is, there's nothing better than devotional service to Krishna. There's nothing better than that. You don't have to aspire for anything else. I mean, just think, you know, a mundane example that someone is completely obsessed to some movie star or something. And they think, you know, my life would be perfect if I could just meet this person and go out to dinner with this person or whatever. Or if I could be the private secretary of the president of the United States or something like that, you know. So we can enter into a personal association with Krishna and serve him really, out of love, spontaneously out of love. So that's what we're aspiring for. That's, you can say, that's our mukti. Mukti padaya sadaya bhak. That's what we're aiming for. Lord Chaitanya, of course, categorized it like that. The devotees aspiring only for Krishna, and mukti's at his lotus feet. To be with the Krishna, you have to be in the state of mukti. You're not going to be, you know, even if you're in the material world, you're not really in the material world. You only serve Krishna when you're liberated. Really, pure devotional service to Krishna, direct contact with Krishna. So it comes automatically. We don't worry about it. Of course, maybe we do in our early stages, but because we're still affected by these things, attachment, fear, and anger, right? We're still affected by these things. Even fear. Fear is certainly a motivation in the early stages. We can fear suffering. I don't want to suffer, so let me chant Hare Krishna. So that is there, but you progress beyond that at some point. You transcend all that. All you want is Krishna. That's what it requires ultimately, actually. Tatra loliyam api mulamekalam janma koti sukrite analabhyate. Loliya means intense desire to have Krishna. That's what we want. When we want that, then Krishna says, "Okay, now you're ready. I want you. I want you." Krishna wants us more, especially when we show that we want him. Then he's the all powerful. He'll take us to him. Okay, are we going to end now? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.